Hello, everyone, and welcome to yet another episode of Building It Up with Bertelsmann, India's first podcast that features and focuses on the growth pangs of a startup. Today, I have Hitesh Oberoi, the Managing Director and CEO of InfoEdge. What we're going to spend time on in this episode is specifically around the sales strategy of Naukri. Hitesh is attributed with building the sales DNA of Naukri and InfoEdge. Right from the early days of Naukri, what was it making the sales team? How did that change when they brought on new products? How did it change when they IPO'd? And a lot more. Thanks for spending time on us.
Thanks for having me here.
And let me ask you a slightly tough question. Were there times when you actually had a conflict with Sanjeev's ideology that we should not be as frugal, but instead we should be aggressive, raise a lot of venture capital, do actual aggressive marketing or anything else that could come with money?
We used to go by first principles. Yeah, what makes business sense is what we should do.
Got it.
Right. So when we started sort of doing Naukri, even there the approach was, listen, how do we make money? I mean, how do we sort of, we used to think business is sort of, you're in business to make money.
To make profit.
So how can you sort of be profitable and also grow business at the same time?
Sure.
I remember we used to have a cash register and every check which used to come in, we used to sort of record in the register and review daily sales.
Wow.
Ki aaj kitni sale hui? Did we sell 30,000 rupees today, 40,000 rupees today, 50,000 rupees today?
Yeah.
And we all broadly had a sense of how much we were spending.
Got it.
Of course, when venture capital became available, the game changed a little bit.
Sure.
You know, we raised 7 crores early on. And we had a competitor, Jobs Ahead. They raised 20 crores, I think, or close to that number. So suddenly after that, the scene changed a little bit. You know, money became available. Money was not even available till then, right?
Yeah.
So even if we wanted to, we could not have spent
there
money.
Wasn't a choice.
But once we raised 7 crores and Jobs Ahead raised 20 crores, the game changed a little bit. You know, people started spending money. And not just us, but there were other internet companies also which raised money. People started spending money on advertising.
Yeah.
So the front page of TOI, I think, was booked for a year after people raised money. And people started moving into fancy offices. So, you know, we were doing 3-4 lakhs a month.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we said, yeah, what do we have to do to get revenue? Right? And we looked at Hindustan Lever again as an example. We are a consumer business. We are a consumer brand. We need job seekers. We need recruiters. And, you know, what do companies like Hindustan Lever and P&G do? They have an elaborate sales channel.
Yeah.
You know, they have dealers, distributors. They're available. Their products are available in millions of outlets. They actually go to consumers and they sell to them in some ways.
Yeah.
And then they market the hell out of their products
to
get people to sort of, so that people prefer their products over other products.
Ask for it. Yeah.
And so we said, if this is what they can do, or what this is what they are doing, and they're all big companies, and they are richly valued, and they're very profitable, then maybe we should also learn from them.
Yeah.
So, you know, to get a marketplace going, as you know, all of us understand, you need two sides.
Yeah.
And so we hit upon this model. So we said, we all have to go and talk to them and teach them what the internet is all about. We can't go through an intermediary. We'll have to do it ourselves.
True.
Maybe if you do that, you know, we'll be able to get more sales than what we're getting today. Because till then, we were selling through direct mail, email, you know, snail mail, and so on. So we hit upon this model where we said, let's hire a few salespeople and go direct to the customer.
Yeah.
So we hired a few salespeople. And we started going to HR managers and to recruiters. And we started telling them about our product and how we were a cheap way to hire, how we work 24/7, how, we had traffic from all over the country, unlike newspapers, which had, you know, which were city specific. And how, you know, they could hire through us throughout the year. And we were dirt cheap, you know, compared to newspapers. And many people started trying us out. Okay. And it was working for them. It worked for some good positions. It did not work for the mass positions at that time because there were just 2 million people on the internet. But it started working.
Yeah.
Now, what that did was, one, it got us revenue, which is great. But it also got us jobs. So, you know, to make a marketplace work, you need to have content. And beyond a point, we were not able to get content because people didn't know about us. So, once we started reaching HR managers, we started getting content. And once we started getting content, we started getting traffic.
True.
We started getting job seekers because we were getting jobs which are not available elsewhere. So job seekers started coming to us. They started discovering us through the internet. They came to us. They said, wow, there are jobs here which are not there in newspapers. There are jobs here which are not available elsewhere. So, you know, this business of reaching out to HR managers solved two problems. This network effect started to work because we got jobs we got sales, we got traffic. Because we got traffic, we got more jobs. Because we got more jobs, we got more traffic. And because we had sales, we could invest more in our business.
Interesting.
Right? And before we knew it, you know, we realized that this was a very, it was not about just putting 8 or 10 people. There were tons of companies out there.
Yeah.
Okay. And we could put lots and lots of people in the market
yeah.
and scale this up for a long time.
Yeah.
And initially, we made a few mistakes.
Sure.
But after a while, we got this right in Delhi. Then we got it right in Bombay. Then we got it right in Bangalore. And within a few years, we had a few hundred salespeople who were all costing us, let's say, 15, 20,000 rupees a month, but were delivering sales, which are 50, 60, 70, 80,000 rupees a month. And that was enough at that time to take care of all the other costs. So within a couple of years, we sort of broke even and we did not have to raise a second round.
Nice. And that's the only money you've ever raised.
That's the only money you ever
before
raised.
Before the IPO, of
yeah,
course.
Yeah.
Did you consciously follow a city by city approach, or did you say that, hey, these are the large accounts / clients / customers that I can sell to, so let me go national?
Yeah. So we first started with Delhi because we were based out of Delhi, Noida. So we said, let's first hire a few people here. And initially, actually, I made a lot of sales calls myself because I went and met customers, tried to sell to them, see if we could get sales. And, you know, and very early on, we had very simple products. So we started with Delhi. And initially, we hired a couple of people. Now, the thing here is that sometimes, the one thing I would tell people here is that sometimes you can give up on an idea if you don't invest enough in that idea.
Interesting.
Right? So we got the first one or two hires wrong.
Yeah.
Right? And we could have easily given up at that time and said, yeah, maybe that's not going to work. It's the wrong idea.
Yeah.
But we hired 3-4 more people. And then a couple of them started to deliver really well for us. And they became very profitable as salespeople. And we said, yeah, if we can get 50 people like them, we are done. Right? I mean, nationally. Right? And what we realized was that we were getting sales from anybody. I mean, there was no science to it. There was no logic to it. It was about who you could sell to and who was ready to buy. Right? Because for a long time, I remember, we wanted to sell to Infosys. But Infosys would not buy.
Yeah.
Right? They were the largest IT company around. Exactly. They were the name to have, but they would not buy.
Yeah.
But then, at the same time, you would sell to some small company, you would visit a small company in Noida and they would buy. So we said, yeah, there's no point in, you know, strategizing and applying a lot of logic here. Just go out and sell. Whoever is interested in buying, let them buy.
Got it.
Because as far as we are concerned,
we're selling. You
know, all revenue is the same.
Yes.
Right? And that is the approach you took. And we said, listen, and therefore we went for geographical distribution of territory.
Got it.
So we hired a sales team, said, okay, you'll work in Noida, you'll work in Gurgaon, you'll work in South Delhi, you'll work in West Delhi, you'll work in East Delhi, go and sell to anybody you can. And go and sell whatever you can. Okay. And what I told people was that try and get a check. Even if it's $500. Get something. Let the call not go waste.
Got it.
Okay. And that started to work. So, you know, people would join in month one, somebody would do $5,000, somebody would do 10,000 rupees of sales. By month three, people started doing 20,000, 30,000 rupees a month. Some people started hitting a lakh within a few months. And once we got that confidence, then we said, yeah, this can be rolled out nationally.
Yes.
So let's hire people everywhere and make this work.
And was this a very aggressive sales culture where they were like targets every day and get the check and so on? Or was it like, you have a monthly target, hit it maybe on the 30th day as well, and that's fine?
So what can happen in sales, like in any other function, is that you can hire people who are not good salespeople, right? And then you don't, and you can take a long time to realize that they're not good. At the same time, and you could also hire some very good salespeople, and they could easily get pushed by other other companies. We were not in a position to pay fancy salaries. So we hit up, and we also realized that in our business, the gross margins are very high. You know, we have 80-90% gross margin business. So beyond a certain level, everything is profit. So if a salesperson costs, let's say, 20,000 rupees a month, everything he makes beyond 20,000 is contribution.
Yes.
Right? So if he makes $40,000, that's 20,000 rupees a month. If he makes 60, that's 40 a month. That's double. Right? So we said, okay, we'll pay modest fixed salary, but we'll make a very attractive incentive plan for our people. Right? And we built a four-tier incentive plan. We said there's a base target. No, below base, you don't get any incentive.
Yeah, that's a qualifier.
That's a minimum that you need to do. And there's a target. At target, you get 100% incentive.
Okay.
Right? So we used to call it super jackpot.
Yeah.
Right? And then there was jackpot and there was stretch and there was base.
Sure.
And then after a while, we introduced super jackpot plus plus as well, because we saw there were some people who were doing more than target as well. And you could easily make in the early years, you know, 50%, 60% of your fixed salary, sometimes even 100% of your fixed salary as variable pay. So what that did was two things. One, people were incentivized to go out and sell. Nobody would stop. Right? Because, you know, you don't have to just, you could do more than your target and make much more money. Then what happened was, because the variable pay was very attractive, people who were doing well actually ended up making much more than market. So if the market would pay them X, because they were doing the targets, they were making 1.3X, 1.4X. So they didn't want to look for a job. Right? They were very happy. And what also happened was that people who were not doing well, you know, they and people who were ending up with below base or at stretch started making less than market. So they would get poached by people who were willing to pay a little more fixed. So over time, it created a culture where people who were doing well sort of thrived and they made much more money than the market. And people who were not doing so well, automatically on their own, after a while, if they were not able to sort of, you know, they left because they were found better jobs outside. And this really worked. Really worked.
Was there any time along the evolution of Naukri where you felt that the early best performers were not so good anymore because they couldn't sell maybe the new avatar of Naukri or the new products that had got launched or anything like that?
Actually, never. See, I tell you what happens in the early years. And in the early years, you know, I was selling in the field, right? So some of the early hires were hired by people who were hired by me. We were all in the field all the time because the culture of the sales team was go and sell, right? Just go and make 4 sales calls every day. That's what we used to tell people. And if you make 60, 70 sales calls a month, you will get your numbers. And everybody was in the field, right? So I would make, I would travel 15 days a month. And what happens when senior salespeople make calls, like people like me, people like the regional heads we hired, the branch managers we hired, is that you are able to train the people you hire very early. Because they learn from you. Because you make a sales call with them. So they are able to see you make a, they see you making make a presentation, they see you pitching, they see how you negotiate. So we realize this later that the guys who worked in the field with us turned out to be great guys because they were trained by us in the field. And in the early days when it was very hard to sell. So the internet at that time was like a concept sale. How will it work? You know, do I have to post a job? Where will I get my applications? How do I pay you? You know, who do I call if something goes wrong? You know, all these things, right? The people who join early, they do a lot of heavy lifting. And they work with the founders, they work with the promoters. And my in my experience, they end up learning a lot. Which is why even today, you know, there are people who've been around in our sales team for 15, 15 years. They're mostly in leadership roles. In the early years, we were focused on acquisition. So the whole sales team was, boss, let's go and sell to everybody. Let's sell something. Right? Now, once you penetrate a lot, then, you know, it's not easy to get new customers. So then you have to upsell. Okay, and that's a different skill, right? So it's all in the early days. It's all about hunting. Layout, you know, get something, sell something. But then it's about okay, how do I get a higher price? How do I sell more? Customers also expect more if they pay you more. So we had to undergo that transition. And today, actually, in some ways, it is harder also because while the brand is well established and many of our customers, existing customers, the whole game is how do you get more out of them? So that is a change, of course, we also sort of went through.
And was that a realization? How many years of existence was it dominated by acquisition? And then when did it start turning towards the upselling slash retention strategy?
So for a long time, it was all about acquisition. For about at least 3 or 4 years, it was mostly about acquisition because there were so many customers to acquire. And nobody wanted to give up what they had acquired. So the sales people are very possessive about their customers.
Very emotional.
You know, they're very possessive about their area, their territory, their customers. But after a while, we realized that, you know, some of the bigger customers actually need some different treatment. You know, they need more account management rather than just sort of selling and, you know. So for the first transition we did was we restructured the sales team and said we'll have a new BD team and an account management team. Right. But initially in the account management team, we also put accounts which were large, but not our customers. Potentially large, you know, because we said you have to, let's say if you want to sell, to have to sell to an Infosys or a Wipro, you need to sort of approach it slightly differently than if you have to sell to a, an exporter in Noida, let's say. And we also realized over time that, you know, actually it was a different skill. Some people, some sales guys are very good at hunting. Some sales guys want to, you know, make 70 calls a month, sell to everybody. They're very good at that. While in some cases, they would rather build a relationship, meet the same customer multiple times, go deeper into the account. They thrive at that. So this was a major sort of shift for us. But we sort of underwent this change about 3 or 4 years into the sales journey. And it was a tough one. Because what do you say? I mean, some people, because, you know, if you tell them that, listen, you are not going to do account management, people will say, why am I not good enough to do account management?
They would see that as a promotion. And not so much if you don't think that they're good enough for that.
But what we also realized was that, you know, the whole new BD game was about volume. And therefore, the sales managers we needed in that game needed to have very good team management capabilities. Because let's say if you have a sales team, we had a sales team of 400 people or 500 people at that time. Only 50 or 60 guys were into account management. 400 were into new BD, right? And therefore, we needed a hierarchy. We needed people to manage other people. So we needed salespeople with those skills. Right? On the account management side, we needed people who were good with customers. Right? Who were sort of into building relationships, going deep into account. There's not too much hierarchy all there. So we had to sort of, you know, move people and say, listen, you should do this part, you should do that part. That resulted in some chaos in the at that time. But after a while, people understood. Right? And so what we told them is, listen, you know, as long as you're meeting your targets, you're good. What's your problem? Right? Focus on meeting your goals. And you're, you know, on the team, on the account management side, targets will be very different. It's all about upselling. It's about, you know, penetration of big accounts. And on this side, it's about getting more customers and sort of, so, you know, so it's not about who's good at what, or you are inferior or somebody superior.
Because this is a very live situation, right? The company was a certain way and suddenly you have to make this dramatic shift. And people don't like change. They hate it, and they then have these new BD say natural evolution account management hai, right? And I'm not getting that, so I must be something XYZ. What was the approach that you decided to take? Was it more consensus driven that I will take the effort to explain to everyone why are we doing it, go individual by individual, aapki kya problem hai, aapki kya problem, etc., or more like autocratic, bhai ye karna hai, this is right for the team. We're going to ensure that everything is right from a compensation perspective. We're going to be fair to everyone. But from tomorrow, this is done.
No, the first one.
Okay.
So, see, I'll tell you. See, these are people you've been working with for years.
Yes.
Right? These are people who've built the company with you.
Yes.
These are people who've slogged it out.
Yeah.
Right? So, if they have concerns, if they have issues, they have to be addressed.
Yeah.
Right? The good thing in our, at least, which sort of, or the thing which worked for us was that we were working with them. We were in the field with them, right? So they trusted us.
Yes.
So it is important to, you know, make people understand the bigger picture.
True.
You know, so make them see the logic of what you're doing.
True.
And why you're doing what you're doing.
True.
Otherwise, it's not easy. And even today, by the way, let's say, even today, we are, you know, we have to restructure sometimes. We have to sort of force changes, right? In sales, in 99acres, for example, or in some of the other businesses we do. Until and unless you take the people with you, it's very hard.
Very hard.
Very, very hard.
How did things change, if at all they did,
yeah,
once you became public?
Oh. So we had a dream run, you know, before we went public. Because we got the product strategy right. We got our sales strategy right. And not just that, India was on a roll actually at that time. India, from 2003 to 2007, I think, grew at 9 or 10% per annum. And the IT companies were on, you know, were growing at 30%. So they were hiring tons of people. So we saw maybe 5 years or 4 or 5 years of 100% year-on-year growth, right? And then we went public in 2006. And the year we went public was okay. Because we went public in November or December of 2006. So that year was okay. Things started slowing down actually around 2008 beginning. Okay, because people may not know, but there was a point in time when there was danger of the rupee going to 35, right? So the rupee had started appreciating. Okay, and the rupee sort of went to 37, 38, 36. And there was, the buzz was that if the rupee went to 32, 33, 34, the IT companies would sort of get wiped, or they would lose all their profit. So things started slowing down for us. And then in 2008, October or whenever, Lehman hit us,
crashed,
right?
Yes.
And everything just froze,
Wow.
Everything just froze, you know. For 4 quarters after that, you know, from plus 50% or whatever we were growing at, we went to minus 25.
Wow.
So that was a swing.
Wow. That is crazy.
But luckily for us, since we were profitable, okay, it was okay. Because, you know, we cut our costs. We stopped advertising. We stopped hiring more people. Okay. So we were still, we still sort of managed to make money. But our sales for 4 quarters, our collection,
yeah.
Not our revenue, because yeah. we collect in advance, crashed.
Wow.
And then things started recovering towards 2010. So now when you're public, of course, you are on quarterly calls, you have to reveal everything to investors.
Yes.
You know, you have a stock price, and even yeah. your employees monitor your stock yeah. price on a day-to-day basis. People have ESOP, you know.
Yeah.
So for a while, it was okay. It was okay for when we IPO'd, the first 4 or 5, 6 quarters. But then we went through this
turmoil,
rough yeah. period. So that is one. You know, you are a public company. We have to sort of reveal everything. And that puts its own pressure on the system.
Yes.
Then, of course, what also happens when you go public is that... you know, you have to invest a lot of time and energy
yeah.
on investor management.
Yes.
Right? You have to beef up your finance department. Yeah. You have to sort of meet investors. And, you know, the internet was not well understood by people in India at that time.
Yeah.
So we had global investors.
Yeah.
So we had to go for conferences to Singapore, Hong Kong, London. You know, you had to meet. And therefore, you need to beef up your management team. You can't take it easy.
Yes.
So if you don't beef up your management team and go public, things could go really bad.
Yes.
So we had to do that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But on the whole, what happens when you go public, or that's what happened to us, is that your brand gets built.
Mm-hmm.
Your credibility gets established.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, things have now changed, and there is a greater willingness amongst employees to work for startups, right? It was not so 10, 12 years, 14 years ago. People are happy joining you.
Yeah.
Okay. Your stock has currency.
Yeah.
So if you want, you can do a lot with it.
Exactly.
Right. So there are benefits, mm-hmm. and also what IPOs do is they discipline you,
yeah,
right? Because you're forced to think,
yes.
You know, how do I make money? You know, because you're valued on profit, not yeah. on anything else.
Yeah, yeah. Which thankfully for you all, you were already very well trained on, so yeah. you didn't have to. As an entrepreneur who is in the advertising/classifieds internet business, do you think that it's usually a winner's take all market in India? Or let's say if you're considering that I should start a new business, or you perhaps build the first few steps of a new business, but there's a strong incumbent already there, what would be your advice to entrepreneurs who are in that? In one of your interviews, Hitesh, you'd mentioned that acqui-hires are quite underrated.
Hmm.
People don't give them as much importance or attention. Has Naukri/InfoEdge have had a history of acqui-hires? And if yes, how did they come about, and how did you try and blend those teams that you had got into the culture of the organization?
Yeah, so we've in Naukri made 3 small acquisitions
okay.
over the last few years. And I think all 3 of them have worked out brilliantly for
nice.
Us. And when we acquired these companies, they were all very tiny.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were, all of them were, or two of them, at least two of them were funded, but only angel funded or Series A funded.
Sure.
And they were all 5-10 member teams.
Mm.
So acqui-hires done early on,
done
at the right price.
Yeah.
And if you're able to retain the team,
yes,
because that's very important,
that's
right? Because if you're not able to retain them, if you're not able to integrate them, if you're not able to get the best out of them,
yeah.
if they languish somewhere inside, then it doesn't work. But
yeah.
but done well, it can result in massive innovation.
Mm.
It can result in you entering adjacent areas which you would not do otherwise,
yeah.
because there's always a product pipeline, as yes. we all know,
yeah.
right? And if you want to do anything, they'll say, "Boss, number 201 in the pipeline."
Yeah.
But when these people who've been thinking about something for a while,
mm.
Who've been working on a problem and who are passionate about it, come in and they want to do that and nothing else,
mm.
and you can make it work, nothing like it.
Nice. Great. One last question before we close, Hitesh. Considering that you've managed what, again, would be one of the most effective sales organizations in the internet space, do you have some tips and some tricks of the trade for sales-dependent organizations or startups?
Mm.
And I will bucket it, so see if that works for you. So the tip for someone who's starting up, right? So just zero, right? They have no basis, nothing whatsoever. The first days, what would be the best tips that you can share from a sales perspective?
Sell yourself.
Great. Great.
You have to go there, meet customers.
And there is no excuse for that. I
absolutely.
Love that. Yeah,
absolutely.
You have to do it.
Yeah.
And that stems from, again, what you said, because
yeah.
if you do a good job and you actually move with your
yeah.
people, they'll also get trained to become
absolutely.
The best.
Absolutely.
Awesome. When you've become, say, so you've gone the 0 to 10 journey and now you're the 10 to 100 journey. You're still not making money, but you've got some product market fit. Your product is being established. Is there a trick or a trade there?
Especially when you're selling in different cities, right? You need to get the guy on the ground right. The guy who's running the show for you
okay.
in that city.
Yeah.
No matter how good you are and no matter how great a sales head you have And, you know, you can't run an operation in some other city sitting out of Delhi or Bombay or wherever you are.
Yes.
So unless and until you get the leader, the sales leader in that market right, your sales will not grow. So you need to build good leadership.
Of course.
You need to get good people in. But and the person on the ground in that city has to be top notch. You can't run a centralized sales operation.
Yeah. And if you are a large startup, so let's say you're making money now, right? And do things change? Any tips and tricks there for sales?
For sales? I think, see, at the stage we are, or, you know, once you start scaling up, you have to look at things a little more holistically. Sure. So it's not just about selling in the field. Mm. You have to look at other sort of areas as well. So how do you do your pricing?
Yeah.
You need to revisit your business model. You need to figure out whether we need to launch new products to get more money from the same customer. You need to figure out if you can, let's say, if you're a product company, add a service layer to your product, right? Do you need to provide world-class customer service in addition to what you, what are the tools and technologies you should be using? So you need to worry about some of these things to get efficiencies, to get scale, and to sort of, you know, get more from the same customer over time.
Wonderful. Great. Fantastic, Hitesh. This was really good. I loved how deep we went into this sales conversation, because that, I'm sure, is useful for a lot of startups.
Thank you so much.
And with this, we come to the end of yet another episode of Building It Up with Bertelsmann. I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation with Hitesh. There's so much to take away if you're particularly a startup that is focused on a sales setup. Until next episode, when we have another fascinating guest joining us, this is Ankur Variku, your host, signing off. Do not forget to subscribe to Building It Up with Bertelsmann on iTunes, Savan, or SoundCloud. See you all. Have a great week.